Live from the Asylum Fantasy. The music was messed up, Rick, the whole show. It's a complete disaster. I don't know what happened there, but I'm going to blame Blog Talk. So let's try this again. Live at Asylum Fantasy Football.
Yes.
Can you do that?
Thank you for coming in and talking to Fleeger and Briggs here in the Asylum Fantasy Football Show.
At asylumfantasyfootball.com, btrff.com on the Tuesday night blitz. There it is.
Yeah, it is. You know, and it's 6:30 and the Tuesday blitz has started. And you're starting it with the Asylum. And you can drop us a line at asylumfootball@gmail.com. And like Rick said, a Twitter of note,
yes,
at Asylum Football, and we are also heard on WSRU 88.1 FM, the voice of the rock.
Absolutely. So don't know what happened there. Apologize for that, but welcome to our Super Bowl preview, Rick, and we have a very special guest. Looks like he's on the line already, so let's not waste any of his valuable time. It is former Ravens Super Bowl champion from Super Bowl 35, wide receiver Patrick Johnson. Patrick, how's it going tonight?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Long time no talk to you. Glad you could make it.
Oh, man, no question. I mean, it's by the time you guys hit me back, I was getting a little bit salty. I was wondering when you guys were going to call me so I can get on and rant a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, the season, when the fantasy season gets in full tilt, it gets a little busy, and, you know, our apologies. It won't be as long next time.
Oh, no, I'm just teasing. It's all good. Thanks for having me on again, and I appreciate the opportunity again.
So, Patrick, before we jump into the Super Bowl stuff, I definitely want to talk a lot about that with you. Let's go into fantasy just a little bit. This is a fantasy football show. Give you some props. You came on here, I believe it was over the summer, and declared Brandon Marshall your number one fantasy receiver, and then maybe put him in a 1A category with Calvin Johnson. You couldn't have nailed it any more than that. What is it with Brandon Marshall and Jay Cutler? What's going on there, that chemistry that, you know, I don't want to say Marshall was pedestrian when he was down in Miami, but he wasn't what we saw in Denver and certainly not what we saw this year.
Well, I mean, back in the summer, remember when I told you guys that it's all about the system. You know, I mean, Brandon Marshall, even though he had, I guess you could say, pedestrian-type numbers while he was in Miami. But, you know, let's face it, over the past 15 years, Miami hasn't really had a bona fide receiver. So, you know, he goes to a situation when he went down there, really, where they really haven't been in a position where they've even knew how to even handle a high-production receiver. I mean, from the top all the way down, like they just haven't had a guy like that. So he actually goes to Miami and actually overproduces. How do I say this the right way? He goes and performs. He outperforms what they have traditionally had at that position there. And I knew that once he went to a better situation, in Chicago, I knew that he would be able to put up a lot of numbers. I mean, even I called Vincent Jackson. I called that one, too, because I knew that those guys, possession receivers, are always going to have opportunities in one-on-one coverage with the football. And with those guys being big and having a size advantage over DBs, it's just kind of a no-brainer. They're great route runners, and it didn't surprise me. Hell, he caught 3 touchdowns in the Pro Bowl last year. So, I mean, he's just a great receiver. He's a really, really, really good receiver.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Vincent Jackson, he really stepped forward. And in fact, that was one thing I was talking about or wanted to talk to you about. You know, he seemed to have, I don't know what you would call it, you know, attitude problems or whatever in San Diego. I mean, was it just getting out of San Diego? Was it, you know, something that may have just clicked with him and Shiano, or was it just a big contract? But he really seemed to step up and, like, take a leadership role in Chicago where, you know, he always seemed to be more of a loner outcast in San Diego. I mean, what do you make of that?
Are you being Vincent Jackson, right, or Brandon Marshall? You mean
no,
Vincent Jackson, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Vincent, I mean, in San Diego, obviously, I mean, he still had a lot of production.
Right.
But, you know, in San Diego, look who he had around him. I mean, he had Antonio Gates. He had LaDainian Tomlinson. He had Darren Sproles. He had, I mean, you name it. they were loaded with offensive talent in San Diego, and he was just a piece of that. And then, you know, towards his last year there, I mean, he didn't produce as much, but it was due to the fact that there were so many other guys getting the ball. In Tampa, you know, the way that I looked at it, you know, in the preseason was that, okay, they just shipped their tight end off, and now they have a Dallas Clark who's going to fulfill that role, who really is not a true on-the-line tight end. He's more of an H-back, and he's had some health problems. So I figured that Vincent Jackson would be Josh Freeman's security blanket, and he was. So with the absence of that tight end there, opens the door for a big possession receiver to actually have more touches on the football.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and a big surprise for him. I think another thing, we talked a lot the last couple of weeks, just surprises in football and fantasy football specifically. The biggest thing that surprised me this year, Patrick, we had, what, three rookie quarterbacks this year to have tremendous seasons, be it Russell Wilson, be it mainly throwing the ball, running the ball a little bit, obviously what RG3 could do. Andrew Luck stepping right in is more of a pocket passer kind of guy. Do you see something? Has something changed in the league? Has something changed in preparation? How long was it you would never dream of drafting, playing, starting a rookie quarterback, you know, in terms of fantasy numbers and what success you expect of them? What do you think's changed with that in the last few years?
Well, I think, you know, the number one thing that makes it possible for rookie quarterbacks to be able to have early success in the National Football League now is because of a couple things. The first one is just parity. There's tons of parity in the NFL. You know, you have teams who are increasingly younger. Teams are increasingly not keeping their veteran players and keeping their undrafted, well, they're keeping all of their drafted players and keeping a lot of their undrafted players. So the teams from top to bottom are increasingly less experienced. So you're going to see a lot of teams around 500 towards the end of every season. There's a lot of parity there, and you got, quite frankly, you just have a lot of teams that's beating up on each other. You know, it's becoming more of an extension of college football. It's almost like a college football all-star game now with all the young players that they're keeping. And because of the numbers in the NFL being a business, that's just kind of the way that it's going. I mean, you'll probably see more of the same thing even next year. You know, I knew Andrew Luck would have a good season because nothing was expected of him anyways. And he's basically taken a team and given the reins. I mean, he's a good quarterback, so I knew he would stack numbers. I mean, there was no chance that he would get pulled during the season. So, you know, with him not having as great of a defense, of course he's going to throw for a lot of yards because he's going to be throwing a lot. So, I mean, and with RG3, I mean, and a lot does go into where these guys get drafted. RG3, he had a lot of success, but he had out of those three guys, he probably benefited from going to the best team top to bottom and the best front office top to bottom. So he was going to have a measurable amount of success, you know, because of that. And with Russell Wilson, you know, I mean, he's a great player. I don't necessarily think that he was a surprise or a sleeper. I mean, hell, he got drafted in the third round, you know. So it's not like if he was a free agent guy that came in, I mean, I would be more surprised. But the reason why he didn't go in the first round was because a lot of the scouts knocked his height. But his playing ability, that was never a question.
Right, that's true. You know, I guess one of the biggest surprises of me, of course, Indianapolis was always, you know, a playoff team until, you know, Manning was out. Then they just went 2-14, and everybody thought the team had totally disintegrated. And was it a shock factor or what? I mean, Luck comes in, they go back to 11-5. I mean, I understand that there was a huge downgrade for a year in quarterback, but, you know, is he that good all of a sudden? And, you know, getting back to like what we see with these rookies, you know, we had five guys starting, you know, rookie quarterbacks this year. That was a hell of a class, don't you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you look at Indianapolis, and just about every team that they had on their schedule had a losing record. You know, I mean, you look at their division, it's not a very good division top to bottom. I mean, you look at Tennessee, they're not very good right now. You look at Houston, they're really good right now. You know, and you can't take your hat off to the Colts for being playing very competitive football, but they didn't really play. They didn't really have a tough schedule outside of the division, and the division was outside of them and Houston was quite frankly just not good. So there's something to that as well.
Yeah, no question about it. What do you make of someone sticking with the Colts? It just brings to mind, I think, a big surprise this year. But yeah, you don't want to call a guy with this much talent a sleeper. But the reemergence of Reggie Wayne, you wondered, everyone sort of thought he'd follow Peyton Manning. I think that's what we said. Re-signs with Indianapolis, develops an instant chemistry with Andrew Luck. Is this a guy maybe looking forward to getting towards the end of his career? You think he has a few more potential years like he had this year, similar to this year? Where do you see the drop-off coming, especially at the wide receiver position?
Well, you know, wide receiver is one of those things that, you know, wide receivers can play football until they're 40. The reason why wide receivers don't last long in the NFL is because of, A, they're not in a system that will give them the opportunity to have enough production to justify having them on the roster as they get older. But the physical aspect of it isn't the issue. It's the fact that as you get older, can you stack the numbers? You look at Donald Driver right now at the Green Bay Packers. I mean, that guy can still play football for another 4 or 5 years, but when teams look at his production from the year before, they say, okay, how do we justify paying you X when you only had 10 catches on the season? Well, the reason why he had 10 catches on the season wasn't because he wasn't capable. The opportunity really wasn't there for him. So as far as Reggie Wayne is concerned, Reggie, I don't know if he signed. Did he sign just a one-year deal last year? Is he a free agent again? Or I'm not. I have to go back and check. But if he has,
yeah, sure.
I would probably say Reggie Wayne would probably be better suited going to Denver. You know, because they're one receiver away from really being really tough to beat, almost unbeatable. You know, they're one guy away. But, you know, Reggie Wayne, and like you said, I mean, that guy's got another 4 or 5 years if it's on the right team. See, like now, Indianapolis is going to say, okay, well, if Reggie stays, or if he did a one-year deal and he stays and redoes another contract with them, I don't know if they would be willing to give him a long-term deal anyway, because of his age, right? But
certainly not.
No question, can he produce? I mean, no question, can he produce?
Yeah, that's one thing we talked about the last time you were on the show. We were talking about Doug Martin coming in Tampa. We seem to be bouncing around the same teams here. But, you know, we kind of thought, the three of us here kind of thought he would be more eased into it, where LeGarrette Blount was a good, solid running back, and it was going to be a lot of a timeshare thing. He marched right in there. Shauna wanted basically nothing to do with LeGarrette Blount, and Doug Martin just took over in spades. And, you know, I don't know if Blount's going to another team next year or not, but that job certainly Doug Martin's to keep.
Yeah, I mean, but you look at the, you know, the NFL is very trendy. So, and when you look at Greg Schiano coming from Rutgers, who was his back there? Ray Rice. So that's the kind of back that he feels more comfortable with having in his system. So not a knock against LeGarrette Blount, but Doug Martin was a much better fit for what they were running there. But, you know, we'll kind of see what happens, because you're starting to see a lot of these bigger backs become extinct in the NFL, you know, because things are starting to be a little bit more fast-paced. You're starting to see a lot more no-huddle, specifically with this read option stuff. Everything's starting to be a lot more fast-paced. It's almost two-minute drill, but with the entire playbook. You know, typically in the past, you have a two-minute drill or your two-minute offense where it's specifically pass plays, where now there's a no-huddle version of the entire playbook with runs in the scheme as well. So LeGarrette, where he fits, I don't know, but that's the reason why I believe that Doug Martin, you know, is the guy there. But, you know, Doug Martin, you know, one of the things that happens to running backs, and this is why the shelf life on running backs is so it's so slight, is that those guys don't hold up for very long. And Doug Martin's not even the same size as Ray Rice. So unless he's got to beef up some more, because one thing that's for certain is injury when you play that running back position. And it's not a little nagging injury. It's, you know, injuries that hold you out for a long period of time, because there's a lot of pounding going on the side of it.
Yeah, no question about it. And you look at, you know, always the threshold, the 300-carry threshold. I don't know if Doug Martin got near that, but when you factor in the way these guys are in the passing game now, just in terms of hits they take. One guy it hasn't seemed to affect, I'm sure we debated when we talked over the summer, I am just still so amazed, and I bring it up every show, Rick's getting sick of it, at what Adrian Peterson did this year, coming off that injury at the end of the season. Did you ever have a knee injury similar to that? And if not, you know, how in the world did he come? I can't think of any better way to ask me that. How in the world did he come back from that injury to have the best season of his career, what, 9-10 months later?
I never had a knee injury, you know, my entire career, except from, like, you know, patellar tendonitis or stuff like that, that you had the ice, but you just, you know, practice and play and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, what he did was absolutely unheard of. I don't know how he did it, and nobody else knows how he did it. The only person that knows how he did it is him. And, you know, we have to be careful when we look at other cases of guys that have those sorts of injuries, and then you look at Adrian Peterson, and you think that an RG3 is going to basically respond the same way that Adrian Peterson did. It's just not really realistic to look at it that way. Do I think RG3 will rebound from the injury? Of course I think he will. But, you know, to look at situations and make it a rule and not the exception, I mean, that's clearly an exception. I mean, that guy, a torn ACL, it used to be a 12-month injury. But this guy, 12 months later after he blew his knee out at the end of the season the year before, now he's leading the NFL 12 months later with almost 2,100 yards rushing. So, I mean, that's just – I don't know. I don't know how he did it, but he did.
And he preached to the theory that he may actually be a robot.
Well, I'll tell you what. I might have to chest bump him. I don't want to shake his hand. They said, man, if you shake his hand, he's liable to break
it. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, yeah, 2,097 yards, 131 yards a game. And, you know, Jamal Charles, in his defense, yeah, he came back from a similar injury, and, you know, he had over 1,500 yards, and you would think that's just phenomenal, almost overshadowed by Peterson. But, you know, like you said, that's people going to start thinking that that's the norm recovery when it's really not.
Yeah, no, it's now with medicine and technology always improving, that time, that recovery time is going to be shortened. And, you know, maybe some certain training techniques or medical techniques or treatment techniques that are new that people are doing now will probably reduce that recovery time from the injury. But, man, I don't know. I'm still amazed at what he was able to do. Not only coming off of a torn ACL, but even if he didn't tear his ACL and was fresh the year before, what he did is still amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that what he did
is
phenomenal.
Don't run for 2,000 yards.
Yeah.
Don't run for 2,000 yards.
Yeah, not even under the best of circumstances. So talking about reduced recovery time, I guess we have to bring it up. I imagine you saw the news today. Word coming from Sports Illustrated, Ray Lewis. What was it, Rick? Velvet? Deer velvet? Yeah,
apparently.
Hormones? Extract or something?
Oh, you're talking about, they say IGA is the growth factor.
Yeah, so hear anything like that? Just crazy. Ray Lewis, you know, sort of dismissed it, and it sounds crazy to me how this could be on the banned substance list and how somebody could come down to this. Do you give it any credence whatsoever?
You know, I look at it this way. I think, number one, whoever was to put that out, I would kind of question the motivation behind doing it at this time, the first thing. Whether it's true or not, I would question the motivation of the individual to put it out at this time. Second of all, there's a fine line. It's a really fine line between supplementation and using performance-enhancing drugs. You know, in track and field, the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency has Sudafed on the ban list. Like, if you got a cold, you can't even take Sudafed. So, no, I'm serious. Like, you can't even take it. So, I mean, there's a fine line, you know, and then when the common man basically reads an article and says, oh, he was using performance-enhancing drugs, oh, well, the guy has ADD, so he can't take Adderall before he plays a football game. But he's ADD. So I don't really – I question the motivation. I think that there's a fine line between supplementation and abuse. And we also have to go and look at, okay, why are some drugs legal to use and why are some not? What's the difference? So that's the other thing that you have to look at. You have to look at the politics of the medical industry. Like, why are some drugs not legal and why are some legal? And what protocols go into place where people actually make those decisions? Is it what corporation can pay the most money to get approved? Or what is it? So there's a lot of ways to look at it, but I do question the motivation by the individual to put something like that out now, right before the Super Bowl. And I think it's probably just to get some attention. Do I think, guys have a number of different treatment methods to get themselves ready for games. Ray's never failed a drug test. I mean, he's never been dirty before. So, you know, a couple of days before the guy plays his last game, all of a sudden, he's been using performance-enhancing drugs. I mean, the year before, Ray got drafted in 96 with Johnson. I came in 2 years later. I think Ray's rookie year, he almost broke his neck. He had to be airlifted out of the stadium. You know what I mean? He recovered from that.
Yeah.
But he's never been caught. I mean, you know, and I have a really good relationship with Ray. Like, you know, I mean, he's a personal friend of mine, but I just don't see it. But I don't know.
And I don't know nearly as much about this, obviously, as you do when it comes to these kind of performance enhancing drugs and so forth. But I know Ray Lewis has dropped approximately 25 or 30 pounds over the years, so he can keep his longevity going. That really doesn't seem consistent with growth hormones and sort, does it?
No, because growth hormones actually makes you grow.
Exactly.
That's always intrigued me. Yeah, it helps you gain weight. You know, it helps you get bigger. You know, so he definitely wasn't taking that.
Yeah, no question about it. So talking about Ray Lewis, obviously setting up to play his last game in the Super Bowl here, always amazing to me and curious to get your insight as someone who's been in the locker room. The team was really struggling at the time he made that announcement, you know, and it sort of turned into, for lack of a better term, a win one for the Gipper sort of scenario, and this team's just been on a roll. Is this just a coincidence, or is there something to this? Can that fire up a locker room, fire up a group of men? I mean, you're all professional football players. What is it about a guy like Ray Lewis and about a situation like this pulling a team together? You saw it with Pagano and the Colts and the run they went on when Pagano was out. What is it? Or is it anything, or is it just sort of coincidental and maybe a little extra motivation? What is it about these things that fires a team up and that you see the string of success when things like this are going on?
Well, you know, I spent 6 years, like 90% of my career playing for the Ravens. And one of the things that I can say that it's not a coincidence, that these guys are playing the way that they're playing for Ray Lewis. I mean, I've been in it, and I know for a fact that is something about him that is different. You know, there's guys that are natural born leaders, and he is one of them. Like he has, I would equate it to the intangibles of a Peyton Manning. He has the intangibles of a Peyton Manning, but on defense. And everything that he does is he's so passionate about everything that he does, and he makes everyone accountable. And it's just one of those things that when you're around him, man, and he gets to talking, and he just makes you want to go run through a brick wall. I mean, that's the only thing that I've probably been around one other person like that, and it was a coach. He just has that gift, and he really does have it. He's got a gift that he can get those people collectively around him to perform above what they think they can. He just has it. And it's not a coincidence that these guys are playing the way that they're playing. No question that he's the reason why. If you look at the stats on how well the team plays when he's there or when he's not there, it's night and day. It's plain as day to see.
Yeah, the effect he has on that defense, you know, we like
not
to...
Not just the defense, the whole team.
Well, the whole team, exactly. Offense is really...
Even the coaches.
Up. And, you know, that brings us to the offense. You know, Joe Flacco has been taking a lot, you know, pardon the pun, a lot of flack over the season here. He came out with the statement that, you know, he was the best quarterback in the league. And, of course, he was, you know, pretty much scoffed off. But, you know, towards the end of the year and getting him into the playoffs, he's really starting to produce. And this guy's a pretty cool customer.
Yeah, you know, Flacco... You know, he's produced. He stepped up his game in the playoffs. You know, right now, you know, you have some people from his camp saying he's outplayed Peyton Manning, and so he's trying to go get Drew Brees or Peyton Manning money. But you gotta kind of be careful with that, you know, because you know when you start talking about. When you start talking about those guys, you have to – I mean, he's put in a lot of work, but I'm not ready to put him
– Well, there's no doubt, but he's not 37
yeah.
years old and hadn't been doing that for, you know, however many years Peyton Manning has either.
No, exactly. So, but you know, I think he should get a big – I think he's going to get paid, you know, but I think I hope that – I hope that his representative, I don't know, well, I'm sure he's driving the boat, but I hope his representatives don't put him in a position where it's counterproductive to what he's ultimately trying to get. Because Ozzie doesn't do bad deals, you know what I'm saying? He just don't do bad deals. He just don't do bad deals. So, and a bad deal to him is going to be paying Flacco $20 million a year. You know, that's just a bad deal. And then you have the whole prospect of them putting this franchise tag on him, which is if his representatives get to, you know, if they want to negotiate too hard, then they're going to slap the tag on him, and now he's only going to make 14. So you're talking about a spread. You're talking about a spread of 14 to 20 million a year. He's got to work within that spread right there if he wants to get a long-term deal. You know, but. We'll see, but he's played great. He said he was going to go out and do it, and he went out and did it. He's got his team in the Super Bowl. And when you go to the Super Bowl, a lot of the ball has to bounce your way in a lot of ways too. And that's happened too. And now they're in a big game. Win or lose, he's still earning the right to basically go out and get a big contract. But I don't know if it's going to be. You know, I don't know. They probably have to put some escalators and some incentives in there to where he has to continue playing at that level to be able to hit those bonuses. Because they have to be not likely to be earned.
Yeah, and no question about it. I think the big thing, you know, statistically, definitely up this year, 3,800 yards, 22 touchdowns. The number I can't get past, and I've never been a big fan of Joe Flacco, you know, maybe as a fantasy guy, I'm more into the big numbers. This kid's got 8 playoff wins already in his career. It's hard to argue with that. So when you're talking about building a contract, how much are you looking at wins and – or how much are they, I guess I should say, looking at wins and losses, playoff ability versus the statistics and, you know, the ability to just take the team over and run it? Because the one thing with Flacco, they keep winning. But I think with the Ravens team, we talked about Ray Lewis earlier, the weapons he has around him. That's a true team effort out there. I wonder how the contract shakes out. But it's hard to argue against a guy. I'd have a hard time making an argument against a guy who's got 8 playoff wins already in a short career.
Well, you know, see, that's the thing about playing quarterback. Like, sometimes you get all the glory and all the blame, you know. Is Joe Flacco responsible for all of those 8 playoff wins? No, he was just the quarterback of the team that had 8 playoff wins. So
right.
I don't know if you're going to be able to attribute the wins to Joe Flacco. He was just a quarterback.
His agent is going to play on the.
Well, yeah, that's what you pay him to say.
Yep, exactly.
you better say that, because if I was his agent, what do you think I'd be saying? I'd be like Don King. You know, but, you know, no question, he's earned the right to get a big contract. The Ravens have 8 playoff victories during the span that Joe Flacco was the quarterback. You know, Joe
Right.
Flacco doesn't have 8 playoff victories himself. The team does, you Yeah. know. But, I mean, the guy's a great quarterback. But he's got, I mean, look at the tools he's got. He's got Torrey Smith. He's got Anquan Boldin. He's got Dennis Pitta. He's got Ray Rice. He's got Jacoby Jones. I mean, yeah, he's got a loaded offense. He's got tons of guys that can make plays for him out there, you know. And, you know, you have their defense. And, shoot, Jacoby Jones is going to Pro Bowl. Well, he would have went to the Pro Bowl for as a return man. He was a first-team guy. So the Ravens have a really talented team, top to bottom. I mean,
yeah,
look,
there's always a knock that they, you know, the last couple of years of, you know, that their receivers, you know, he just didn't have the receivers. But he's got them now. There's no doubt about that, along with the running game.
Well, historically in the past, I know that when we won the Super Bowl back in 2001, I mean, we were just as we were actually a more loaded team top to bottom than their team is now. We just didn't have a We didn't have Joe Flacco. We didn't have a Joe Flacco, right?
Right.
You know, but Trent was an excellent game manager. But our team was so talented, we didn't need a Joe Flacco. See, right now, the Ravens need Joe Flacco to win. They have to have Joe Flacco to win because their defense isn't good enough to win the game.
And that's going to be important when Ray Lewis does hang up the cleats, too. I mean, don't you think it's going to be important? I mean, Flacco, I got to assume, is going to have to be the guy to take this team on his shoulders, because the emotion, you know, the emotional leader and the guy that's carried him for a long time is going to be gone. And, you know, unless somebody grabs them now, you know, who's going to take that team on their shoulders and lead them?
You know, I don't know. I mean, and effectively, I feel like once Ray is done, the heart of that team is gone. It's gone. So you're looking at trying to replace. It's like the heart of the team is going to be gone when he's done. And what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to figure out. They can't just do things. It'll be a different dynamic once he's done. It'll have to be. The way that they go about doing everything is gonna. It'll have to kind of materialize. And whoever the next guy is, he might not be a rah-rah guy. That might not be their thing. You know,
right.
But somebody will step up, and you would think that it should be Flacco because, you know, he's the he'll be the highest paid player on the team. But, you know, leadership doesn't have to come from a guy who's making the most money.
Yeah, no question about it. So, you know, talking about Joe Flacco, let's go to the other side of the ball. You got a kid in Colin Kaepernick coming in, only 9 NFL starts under his belt, great end of the season, nice run through the playoffs. Can he keep it up, or is the Super Bowl too big of a stage for a guy in his situation?
Well, what I think, I think, and obviously I'm going to be biased. You know, obviously there's bias
we're
going on right now.
How you think it's going to end, I think we might know already.
Well, I feel like this. I think the Ravens are going to say, okay, you can run if you want to, but there's going to be some guys out there ready to lay him out if he runs like that. He's not going to fake. These guys are going to be so emotionally jacked for this game, he might not ever face another team like this ever in his career. Based on the circumstances around everything this weekend. I think that what the Ravens are going to do is they're going to say, okay, run. And we're going to tattoo you. Every time you touch the ball, we're going to tattoo you every time. Saying that, I think they want to try to keep him in the pocket. And if they keep him in the pocket, that pass rush is going to be a good game. I'll say that. If they keep him in the pocket, he's going to have to beat him with his arm, and I just don't. In order for San Francisco to win, I think that Vernon Davis is going to have a monster game. And Michael Crabtree is about a 4-5 receiver. Nobody's scared of Michael Crabtree. I would say Vernon Davis and a surprise game from Randy Moss. You know, those two guys have to have big games in order for San Francisco to win. And Colin Kaepernick has to have a good game with his arm. Because he's not going to win on his feet. That's just what I think.
The question is he good enough then to win it with his arm? You saw what he did to Green Bay, did it all with his legs, and then seemed to do it with his arm when Atlanta shut him down as far as running the ball. Do you think he's good enough? I guess you have to look at to beat the Ravens with his arm.
He has the tools there. I think Colin Kaepernick has problems with noise. You've seen him in quite a few games this year get flustered when it's a high-pressure situation. He's had problems getting in and out of the huddle, making audibles, things of that nature. You're probably going to see Baltimore, the defense, you're going to see them disguise a lot of coverages, disguise a lot of blitzes. They are going to bring a lot of heat. They're going to try to confuse him. But young quarterbacks, that's just what you do. You don't just line up in the base defense and let the guy go out and just run play. You got to move a lot of people around. You got to bring people at him, and you got to hit him when you get a chance. It doesn't necessarily mean you sack him, but you got to always make him put him in a hurry. If they can do that, but he does, he can do it. I mean, the guy can play football from the pocket. He's a great passer, but those other guys have to have good games. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, we're talking about Kaepernick. Can he do it? If Vernon Davis is getting open and if Randy Moss is getting open, then yes, he can do it if he's got the time. But if those guys don't have big games or if they definitely have to get Vernon Davis the ball. That's where the matchup. He creates the mismatch on Baltimore's defense.
Yeah, the guy's a freak. He exploded in the last game. He'd been pretty quiet up until then. But, that's to me, is a real key when it comes to that. But, you know, it brings up something. The last time we talked when you were on the show, you were talking about the Super Bowl parade and so forth and how some guys were crying and full of emotion and whatnot. And you said you really didn't feel a whole lot of emotion, and it took a while to sink in. And it kind of brings me to my question. Kaepernick made a statement this week that, you know, he doesn't really feel any pressure going into this game. Do you really buy that, that he doesn't feel any pressure going into the Super Bowl?
Man, come on. You know I'm not.
Yeah, there you go.
I got to stand up at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning looking at film, scared. Because you know that. Because you think. Do you think for one second that the Ravens defense is going to leave anything on the table this weekend? You think
no.
Ray Lewis are going to let those guys leave anything on the table? They're going to leave every ounce of it on the field. Because you know why? Because Ray is not going to have anything left at the end. He's going to be done.
Exactly.
I think the Ravens are going to win by at least 10 points. I think the Ravens are going to win by at least 10 points.
Yep.
At least 10. I think their defense is going to play so good and so well for Ray Lewis's last game that they shut down their offense. And San Francisco's got a great defense, but I do know that they have problems down the field. So I look to see Torrey Smith having a real big game. They got even the Pro Bowl safety that from San Francisco that went to the Pro Bowl. Like, he's a liability and covers down the field.
That was going to be the next question. You know, who do you see being the difference maker? I think obviously we know Ray's going to be a big difference maker, probably an MVP candidate. Do you think it's Torrey Smith? Assuming Baltimore is going to win offensively, is that their biggest player? I could see Ray Rice struggling a little bit in this game. Is it down the field? Is it going to be big plays that win this game? You say Baltimore probably going to win by 10. How do you see them getting there?
Well, I see them getting there. I think Ray Rice will still carry the ball for over 20 times, which every time that Ray Rice runs the ball has over 25 carries and they win. But I think that the threat alone of Torrey Smith getting down the field is going to soften up their defense in a way that's going to allow Anquan Boldin, Dennis Pitta, and Ray Rice and whoever else to have good games. But if they don't respect Torrey Smith, that guy's going to have two or three touchdowns.
Yeah, no question. I'm glad you bring up the 20-25 carry thing with Ray Rice. It's something that's a sticking point to us. We're going to swing it back to fantasy just real briefly here. Why is it the Ravens better this year, but in the past and a few times this year, why isn't a guy like Ray Rice getting the ball 20-25 times? Something that makes Rick over here about having aneurysm week after week is when Jamaal Charles, will coming off of a 200-yard game, will get four carries the next game. What's causing, outside of the game situation, I guess if you're getting blown out, that I understand. But in a close game, in a good game, in a normal game, why are these guys sometimes just not getting the ball?
Well, you look at Ray Rice, what you don't want to do is, you have to look at sometimes he gets catches that are just like runs. So he might not carry the ball 25 times, but he might touch it close to 20 times. And the flow of the game kind of dictates when you run the ball. Like if you get down 10 points, or depending on the game, you go down by points, you got to throw the ball. You can't just run out the time with Ray Rice. So you look at last week, the statistic proved true. When Ray Rice has over 25 carries, they win. Even though his carries came late in the game and they were up by points, they still won and he still had 25 carries. So there's ways for him to get to the 25. He was just icing the game week before last. But you can't just give Ray Rice the ball 25 times in a row and expect to win the game. It has to be a good mix of run and pass. And depending on the flow of the game and depending on what's happening during the game, that dictates how he gets the ball. Maybe sometimes he should get the ball more. But unfortunately, it's a little bit more complex than what guys like us, we're just sitting at home watching it or whatever. It just kind of looks like he should have the ball, but, when you're down there and you're calling these plays and you're a lot of times you're trying to set up other things. Let's just say a starting cornerback goes out the game. You look at when Baltimore played New England. If Aqib Talib does not pull his hamstring in that game, I don't know if the Ravens win that game. But if you look at because Aqib Talib had Anquan Boldin locked down, Remember?
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
No, I mean, he didn't have a catch, I don't think. He had it locked down. And as soon as the guy pulled his hamstring and went in the locker room, what happened? Boom, Anquan Boldin started getting the ball a lot. Well, Anquan Boldin's getting the ball, but Ray Rice isn't getting the ball. So it all depends on what's happening. Like if a starting quarter goes down, you know where you got to go take advantage of the mismatch.
Yeah, that's so a that's good really point there. You analyze and hit the weak point. There's no doubt about that. What about, going into the Super Bowl, we talk about Kaepernick and Flacco and Ray Rice and so forth. Not a whole lot's been mentioned, but I really think Baltimore needs to make sure Frank Gore doesn't run all over them and really open things up. How do they stop a guy like Gore?
Hit him. No, seriously. I mean, you stop a guy like that by punishing him every time he carries it. Hit him every time. Whenever you got a chance to hit him, everybody get to the ball and try to strip it and pound it every time. That's it. That's how you stop him.
So in saying all this, and as you said, you're thinking Baltimore by 10, what's the scenario where San Francisco wins this game?
If Vernon Davis has over 130 yards receiving and two touchdowns, Baltimore don't win the game.
So that's all we need is 130 and two touches.
Well, that's a lot.
I'm just saying, but that's a big game.
Yeah, that's a huge game.
If he has it, he's going to have a game like that because you look at Baltimore's defense, they run a 3-4, right? So traditionally in football, you're always, unless you're like in a prevent or some sort of zone, you gotta rush four guys, right? So one of those four linebackers at any time has to be coming in the rush. Well, if you got the tight end out in the route, you got a linebacker that's gonna have to cover him or a DB who's much smaller. So that's your mismatch. So if he has a big game, it's going to be tough for the Ravens to win. And they can, but they got a match point from point. They got to go down to score points. So Vernon Davis would have to have a game like that with Frank Gore having a nice night rushing the football.
So just going back to the general Super Bowl, maybe we'll get out of here on this. As a guy who's been through it, talking to a couple of guys who've never been anywhere near it, what's this week like just in general with the distractions, with the ticket requests, with the parties? Does it make preparation harder? How do you stay out of that? We know historically some guys haven't. Just in general, what's this week like? I can't even imagine the pressure.
Well, I mean, I think – right now, you pretty much, if you're playing, all of your ticket requests are all handled. You only got so many, certain amount of tickets, so they're probably already all gone by now. Your family's not really bothering you. You don't go to, I think during Super Bowl week, I think I went to one event, but it was like really quick. So I didn't go out to any parties or nothing like that. And we practiced and, you had your media day. I mean, these guys are focused and their schedule is in a way to where it's, you do this, you do this, you do this, you do this. You have a little bit of free time, but your free time, you might be hanging out with your family or something like that or a significant other or whatever, but you don't have a whole lot of free time to go and be doing external things that just aren't applicable, But it's you're pretty much scheduled in for the week. Like the guys got down there, I think, on when they got there yesterday, right? Yeah. They got there yesterday, so they probably when did they have media day? Today or yesterday?
I think it was today, yeah.
Yeah, it's today. So tomorrow, which will be the typical Wednesday practice, which will be like any normal work week, Thursday it'll start lightening up, and then Friday be a walkthrough, Saturday walkthrough, a lot of film study, and then Sunday. Thing about Super Bowl Sunday is that everything takes longer because of like all the TV commercials, and then you have the national anthem. It's like a whole, and then the halftime is actually even longer. You're just part of a big production at that point, but not too much changes.
Yeah, that's interesting there. Going back, we're sticking with the Super Bowl. One story that's just like dropped my jaw this week was the allegations by Tim Brown and the affirmation of Jerry Rice that Bill Callahan, sabotaged their Super Bowl effort against Tampa. What do you make of that? I obviously know nothing about this. Bill Callahan says he's outraged, and they said he had, an outside interest because he was friends, with Tampa, with Gruden and so forth. And that, I don't know. It makes no sense to me, but, there's two basic, Tim Brown, should be in the Hall of Fame. Jerry Rice obviously is. And, they're saying that he sabotaged their Super Bowl effort.
Well, maybe he did with his bad play calling. So that might be what they're referring to. But
well, they said he changed the game plan, totally changed the game plan from a run plan to a pass happy plan the day before, which to me didn't sound a whole lot because they went crazy pass happy all year with Rich Gannon anyway,
right?
And that was the whole premise of their sabotage theory.
Well, maybe they feel that he sabotaged it, but it might not have been, and maybe he did, but maybe it wasn't intentional. It's just that he thought that they should abandon what they worked on the whole week and then change it. But Bill Callahan ain't coaching in the NFL no more either.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Maybe not a coincidence.
Well, no, it's not a coincidence that he's not coaching in the NFL anymore. And that's the reason why, because you abandon your plan the day before the game.
Right.
So that might be what I think, sometimes like people kind of read too much into what some of these guys are saying. And, I don't know if I can't see how those two guys would say that the guy deliberately sabotaged the game. I mean, if that's the case, then how come it's just coming out now as opposed to any time before? So I think maybe it was just read into, and maybe they honestly feel that he did. Sabotage might not be the correct word to use. I just maybe blew it.
Right.
Just I think,
bad coaching job maybe then.
Yeah. He just, thing it is, he took ownership the fact that they just didn't, it might have been the wrong move to change the game plan right before. Obviously, when you're on the wrong side of history, then you can say those things, but those guys wouldn't be saying that if they won.
Yeah, had they changed the game plan and they'd won, he'd be a genius.
Right. So, there you go. I mean, to victory, what's the saying? To victory goes the spoils or something like that? However you say it, same difference.
Something like that. It's close enough.
Yeah, they just lost. It is what it is.
So we're about out of time. We sure appreciate you coming on. Anything you want to promote? Anything you have going on?
Say that again?
I said we're about out of time. Anything you want to promote? Anything you have going on?
Oh no, not at the current time. I'm just working on a couple things that I'm gonna launch here in a little while. But no, I got my head down. I'm sawing wood, man. It's still January.
Yep, no doubt about it. Well, hey, we sure appreciate you coming on. It was a great time, and we'll make certain it doesn't take as long next time. We'll get you back on over the summer here, and I'm going to pay a little closer to attention to all your picks and all everything, i.e. the Brandon Marshall pick and basically anything at the wide receiver position.
Okay, yeah, that'd be great, man. You guys have a good day and have fun with watching the game this weekend. It's going to be a real good one.
All right, thanks, Patrick. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, see you.
Thanks again.
Yep.
All right, that was Patrick Johnson, Super Bowl champion of the Tampa, oh, good Lord, in Tampa Bay, the Baltimore Ravens Super Bowl 35 champion. Rick, here's the takeaway I take from that interview.
One thing that we really blew, we didn't get to ask him about Jamarcus Russell's comeback.
I'm sure he had a good opinion on that. But here's what I take from it, Rick. This whole interview I'll remember nothing of, but at one point about 10 or 15 minutes ago, Patrick Johnson said, guys like us just sitting at home watching the game. So I'm happy to report that we're just like Patrick Johnson, world-class athlete, Super Bowl champion, world-class track star, everything that he is, and he says guys like us. So I'm going to go with that and run with it, Rick. I'm basically a professional athlete as well.
Well, yeah, and I'm obviously I'm an athletic genius when it comes to coaching and knowledge up here in this egg of mine.
But that's how pathetic I am. I think how low my self-esteem is, which is probably why we do this show, that he says guys like us just in passing, and I'm 9 miles off the ground right now.
Yeah, it is pathetic.
All right, Rick, well, before we get out of here, obviously we know how Patrick felt. The last question was supposed to be who wins. I think he made that very clear very early on. What's your prediction for Sunday?
I've been thinking long and hard about this, and I am going 31-26 Baltimore.
Okay. I'll tell you what, Rick, I was really on the fence on this one, and that's why one of the first questions I wanted to ask Patrick was the fact that the momentum, the Ray Lewis story, the inspiration coming from Ray Lewis, if it's real. You know what? You see it all the time. Is it real? I had my doubts going in. I wonder if I still don't a little bit. You know, my thought, I even put in the question, you know, these guys are all pro athletes. They're all playing for their own reasons, obviously part of a team. But I'll tell you what, as a guy who played with him, considers him a good friend, I'm going to buy into it now. So I'm going to, well, as a guy who was on the fence, I want to say he swayed me. As a guy who's on the fence, you know, I can see 31 sounds about right. I can see a defensive score or a special team score. I don't even think it's necessarily close as 10. I'm going to go 31-17 Baltimore in that situation.
Yeah, there you have it. It's surprising. It's Baltimore's tending to come up a lot more than what I expected when at first.
Yeah. Yeah, and you look at it, you look at the Kaepernick situation, you wonder. You saw what he did in Green Bay. Kid just looked invincible, absolutely invincible. For a half, he looked almost bad against Atlanta and then again looked invincible in the second half. I just wonder about a guy with his limited exposure to the spotlight, Vic, that's stepping onto the biggest stage with all the storylines and everything going on the other side of the ball. I really wonder how he performs, and I worry about him a little bit.
And time will tell. You know, Green Bay had absolutely no plan to defense this guy.
None whatsoever.
So, I mean, there's really nothing, you know, nothing on Kaepernick on that as far as pressure and this sort of thing. And Atlanta, we talked about with Nick Reducanu a couple weeks ago, you know, Trader X. You know, Atlanta's defense seemed to be overrated about all year. And, you know, Matt Ryan and Roddy White and so forth seemed to carry that load, and they came back. And they almost let Seattle take it away from Atlanta, you know, but they did let San Francisco take it away from them. But, you know, I don't think that, you know, Baltimore, I think they're a different animal. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure. I think there's going to be a lot of tricky schemes. And I agree with them one thing. They're going to leave everything on the field. Yeah. There's not going to be any plays not tried, you know, or defensive schemes not tried at least once.
Yeah, and I think the difference between Baltimore and Atlanta is if Baltimore gets up, and I think based on emotion, I agree, I think that's where the emotion ties in at the beginning of a game. If Baltimore gets up like Atlanta did, they're going to stomp on their throats. You're not going to see that comeback that you saw against Atlanta.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
All right, Rick, well, we are plumb out of time, so great show. Thanks again to Patrick Johnson, formerly of the Baltimore Ravens, played on the Super Bowl 35 championship team. Spread the word to everybody about the Super Bowl preview. Check it out. We will be back next Tuesday with the Tuesday Night Blitz. We'll break that down and start getting ready for the 2013-14 fantasy season.
Which is what I'm really waiting for.
All right, until then, we'll see you.
Take care.
Grab your beer and get on up in the truck. It's going down tonight. It's all on me. It's BYOB, and I got all we need. Baby.